excuse me, I'm sorry. We're going to open the, we're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 227. Senator Courtney and Senator Menes. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to start?
Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator from District 17, which is here in Salem, Kaiser. When the Oregon Humane Society first asked me to introduce this bill to make a crime of sexual assault of an animal, I had a question that I'm sure many of you also have. How serious a problem is this? Bestiality, contrary to many beliefs, is not a behavior of the past. Almost any internet search engine will lead to graphic and disturbing material. At first, there were jokes and sneers, but I am confident that once we get beyond the uncomfortable nature of this particular topic, we will agree that this bill has merit. This bill is necessary because bestiality does not fall under any current abuse statutes, and I want to emphasize that. It doesn't fall under any statutes that we now have on the books, and there are members of the judiciary here today to testify in particular as to that. Many sexual abuse cases are never even tried because of the difficulty in proving abuse as outlined under current law. This bill eliminates the need to show physical damage and allows witnesses, testimony, photos, and where available, physical evidence to come in to make the case. Even right here in my own county last week, there was an individual who pled guilty, actually it's 2 weeks ago, to sexually assaulting a dog. The judge presiding that case, who's in the court here in our hearing room today, presiding at the case, is here today and will be testifying, who actually presided the case and heard the case. She said that had this individual not been caught in the act and confessed to the behavior and had been seen by officials as a human safety risk due to his history, the case would never have been heard. There is no doubt that sexual abuse of an animal is just that, abuse for the simple yet detrimental factor of lack of consent. In addition, sexually abused animals are at increased risk for cancer, infections, physical injury, emotional distress, which results in behavioral problems and sometimes even death. Other than the abuse to animals inherent in these sex crimes is the fact that animal cruelty is strongly linked to violence towards humans, a concept we have all become too familiar with. I recently became aware of a Federal Bureau of Investigation study which found substantial rates, in some cases over 50%, of severe animal abuse, including bestiality, in childhood and adolescence, in a sample of serial sex homicide perpetrators. I will defer to law enforcement and psychological professionals to provide further testimony to this connection. In addition, there will be testimony regarding animal cruelty as a warning sign that perpetrators may be victims or witnesses of physical, sexual, or emotional abuse. It is for these reasons, for public safety and animal welfare, that we introduce this bill. At least 24 states have laws that are very much in line with this to prohibit sexual activity with animals. Now, that was a quick statement. I do want to point out that back in the early 70s, we had a law, basically, that dealt with this. And as such, if that law was still in the books, we wouldn't be here today. It was then 167.040. Any person who commits sodomy or the crime against nature or any act or practice of sexual perversity, either with mankind or beast, and it goes on from there. We removed those statutes, and I'm not going to get into a big dissertation as to why, but basically our society has evolved to a situation in terms of sex between freely consenting adults, et cetera, et cetera. But we actually had a law in a book involving this. I also want to point out that there is an amendment that I have prepared, a -1 amendment, which should be before you. This is a very well thought out amendment. I'd like to say it was my own, but it wasn't. And it would require that any individual it's found guilty of this crime, it speaks to both adults and juveniles, would have to undergo psychiatric or psychological evaluation. This is very, very important. This is very, very important because of the issue that I raised, that this kind of conduct could portend of major activity down the road that could be very, very harmful to humans. It also could point out where a child has themselves been very badly physically or emotionally or sexually abused. So the -1 amendments, I would hope you would also consider very seriously. I'd like to make them part of this bill. Basically, any and all people convicted of this crime, either the juvenile or the adult, would have to undergo this kind of examination.
Thank you, Senator. Other questions for Senator Courtney?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Minnis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate Senator Courtney's prepared remarks and also the additional remarks. My reason for supporting this particular measure is that having been a police officer with the Portland Police Bureau for 25 years and 4.5 of those years serving as a child sexual abuse investigator with the Detective Division and multidisciplinary team, I had at least one incident out of 4.5 years involving a child who had been molested by a 46-year-old man who, when we executed a search warrant on that person's premise and confiscated a number of items of evidence, part of the items of evidence recovered from that particular scene were videotapes of sexual behaviors involving young women and animals, which I found abhorrent. What I found in that case, and this person subsequently pled guilty to sexual abuse of this child, was that this individual was using that pornography as a way of indoctrinating or somehow getting this child to engage in certain types of sexual conduct with him. So my experience is anecdotal from my experience, but it's the kind of experience that you find fairly significant. And when you talk about animal abuse, it's one of those things where you have people, they'll kind of laugh at you a little bit, they'll tell some off-color remarks or jokes about it. But I'm here to tell you that with the advent of increases in child sexual abuse and sexual violence, that there is significant research and background that would support prohibiting this kind of activity, specifically for the purpose, I think, of the amendment that's been requested here, dealing with children who might have some predisposed activities involving the abuse of animals or sexual involvement with animals, because there is also research that would indicate that some of these individuals grow up to be psychopathic or sociopathic personalities who also become psychosexual killers. And although those are a very small portion of our population, we hope, thank God, it's a very significant population. So this is actually a fairly minimalist bill, in my opinion. We found in our research that the United Kingdom has a life sentence as part of their prohibition on animal abuse or having sex with animals. I do want to point out that the bill, I just want to simply read the bill to you. It says that a person commits the crime of sexual assault of an animal if the person touches or contacts or causes an object or another person to touch or contact the mouth, anus, or sex organs of an animal for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desires of a person. So when it comes to any kind of activities that might occur in the process of animal husbandry or other kinds of legal activities, no one would violate this kind of the statute unless they were doing so for the purpose of gratifying themselves or someone else sexually. So I would urge the committee to take seriously this bill and take seriously the comments and testimony of those individuals that will follow us. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there questions for... Yes, Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank the two of you, Senator Courtney and Senator Minnis, for introducing this bill. There are certain subject matters in this process that take a lot of courage to get out in front on, and all depraved sense of humor aside, and I have probably one of the more depraved senses of humor, I really appreciate the fact that you are willing to step up on this and deal with a problem that really is serious and in many cases tragic. So thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Are there others signed up to testify on this bill? Do we have a sheet? Okay, I'd like to call first person then would be Myrna Wagamont and from Marion County. Thank you. Would you please come forward and give us your name and address and...
Sure. My name is Myrna Wagamont. I live at 6255 Radiant Drive, Northeast in Kaiser. In 1999, I had an incident in my home where two four-month-old puppies were being sexually abused. I called the Humane Society thinking that I would just turn this over to them. They would take care of it. The lady I talked to informed me it was not a crime to have sex with an animal in this state. I didn't believe her. I called the Salem Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, One of them told me to call legal aid, and they all told me the same thing. It was not a crime. I went to the Kaiser Police Department and sat there until an officer came in, an Officer Garlington, and I told him my story. And he said there was a district attorney named Diana Moffitt who was an activist for animal rights. Maybe activist isn't the right word, but she was a believer in animal rights, and that he would talk to her. She came back and told him to, he came back and said that she said for him to file a report. This case was just heard in court a couple of weeks ago. It was heard in court, I think, in November, but it was settled a couple of weeks ago. A few weeks after this other incident, I had an 8-year-old Doberman that got sick, and I took her to the vet, and she had a bacterial infection in her bladder, and put her on antibiotics, which was okay, and we thought, and then this didn't help, and the doctor did more tests and found to find out what the bacteria was. And it was an E. coli bacteria. And he knew what had happened to the other dogs. And so he said the only way that she could have got it was some semen coming down from the rectum and going into the bladder. And she died. And she died because there's no law against this kind of behavior happening. And I think there should be. But this isn't something that's just new in our society. This has been going on for years. In 1700, in the history of New England, a man copulated with his animals and he was hung. In 1601, a 16-year-old boy had intercourse with his dog, and the boy and the dog both were hung. I certainly am not advocating hanging anyone. I have a friend who's on the computer. I'm computer illiterate, so I don't know any of what this means, but she said on the Alta Vista search engine alone, there were 139,200 pages on bestiality, and there were 10 sites per page. On the Google search engine, there were 261,000 sites on bestiality, most of them dealing with sex with animals. On Lyco's search engine, there were 408,000 sites, and most of them dealing with sex with animals. She said she wouldn't be surprised, but what there were probably billions of sites on the internet regarding having sex with animals. Thank you.
Very much. Are there any questions for, am I pronouncing it right, Wagamot?
Yes, uh-huh.
Any questions for her? Thank you very much, and certainly sorry about your animal. I know it's very attached to them. Janice Rhodes. Oh. And Paul Lipskin.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Yes.
My boss had to come with me because this is my first experience. He wanted to make sure I was okay. My name's Janice Rhodes. I'm a Marion County Circuit Court judge, and I've been a judge since 1990. And the case that Ms. Wagamot was just talking about was my case, and unfortunately for Senator Courtney, I am less articulate than he, and I misled him, I think. It was actually a bench trial. The individual who sexually assaulted Ms. Wagamot's puppy took it to trial under the statute of animal neglect. And it was understood at the time that we tried the case that the that there was no factual question. It was entirely legal. It was a defendant and attorney waived jury trial, and the total argument was it's simply not against the law. And So in the past, I had placed somebody on probation for an animal abuse for similar behavior with a horse. Actually, wasn't similar, but I'm going to get into that in a moment. But so the argument on this case was whether or not sexually penetrating an animal is against the law, and there wasn't any evidence from the defense. It was almost like a stipulated facts trial because there was no dispute. And so the question then became whether or not there is any statute that would adequately cover the act, the facts in this case. And I'd have to say that it was pretty tortured to get to the point where I ended up finding the defendant guilty because it wasn't under animal abuse, which would require an assault and an injury. It was under neglect, which is that it falls beneath the minimum care sufficient to preserve the health and well-being of the animal. And part of my reasoning was that I don't think that most people in the state of Oregon believe that sexually assaulting an animal is part of what's necessary in order to take for the well-being of the animal, such as food, light, water, exercise. And so I recognize that I was perhaps in the minority of judges who would have read the animal neglect statute so broadly as to find this behavior to be criminal. And Judge Lipscomb and I just briefly consulted for a moment, and he had indicated to me that he would have granted a motion for a judgment of acquittal or found the individual not guilty at the conclusion of the trial because it's not adequately set forth. Now, that's I think, the reason why you need to have a statute that specifically prohibits this kind of conduct to... I mean, it would have been very difficult to instruct a jury as to the elements of, the elements require that they have, that it happened in Marion County, that it happened on or about a particular date, and that they had neglected and failed to provide minimum care to the animal, as opposed to, which is a negative, it's a passive, as opposed to the aggressive acts of someone who actually performs a sexual act with an animal. So I think that the public is entitled to have specific statutes that tell them what's against the law, and it shouldn't be hit or miss as to whether or not a particular judge is willing to interpret a statute in that way. 4 years ago, I placed an individual on probation when he pled guilty to animal abuse. He had been sexually assaulting his neighbor's miniature horses. He was placed on 5 years probation in November of 96, and in January of 97, he had taken what we call a full disclosure polygraph. At that point, he had indicated that he had fantasized sexually about young girls 9 to 14 years old and that he was addicted to pornography. So he had a probation violation at that time. 3 months after that, he had another probation violation because he wasn't attending sex offender treatment, still viewing pornography, and he was terminated from that treatment program. He went into another treatment program. And in that, he was continuing to purchase pornography and purchasing prostitutes, not attending the group. He was terminated from that group. At each stage, he was put in jail for a period of time, but it was still a misdemeanor. And he was placed on electronic surveillance. He had another probation in October of 97 because he denied possession of pornography, but when they searched his house, they found pornography and they found binoculars next to a window where he admitted to watching people in an apartment complex. And later he admitted that he was also watching the middle school students of the middle school that he resided nearby. In January of 97, so he's now been on probation a little over a year, he had another polygraph and admitted to fantasies of raping 15-year-old females and attempting to funnel, that he had in fact attempted to funnel a 6-year-old and that he had held down his 12-year-old sister while he fondled her. That was in his past. In December of 97, he had an evaluation, and he was determined to be a severe risk to engage in pedophilic behavior and to hurt his victims. He was held in custody until he could be admitted to the Oregon State Hospital inpatient treatment program,
where he went in March of 98. He was ultimately terminated from that program in December of 98, still considered to be a sexually dangerous person. At the hospital, he had disclosed that he'd had 8 child sexual offense victims, including 1 boy, 7 girls, ranging in age from 9 to 14, that he'd used physical force and also planned to carry out sexual assaults of a more violent nature, and that he had gone cruising in his car looking for women he could hit with his car so he could kidnap them for sex if they survived the injury from the car. He disclosed in treatment much more cruelty to animals and voyeurism. Now, that person was only on probation for animal abuse, for having intercourse with a miniature horse on numerous occasions. None of these things are crimes of conviction other than the animal abuse, and the only way we found him, if you will, and had him under some form of control for a period of time was because he entered a plea of guilty to animal abuse. If he'd taken that case to trial, he would have surely been acquitted because there was no physical injury to the horse.
So. Thank you very much, Judge. You were worried about appearing before us. I imagine we would have more trepidation appearing before you. Are there questions of the judge?
Only the guilty have trepidation.
Oh. He says only the guilty have trepidation. Any other questions? Well, Judge Lipscomb.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Lipscomb, Marion County Circuit Court. I'm the presiding judge in Marion County, as Judge Rhodes has just indicated. I think it's hard for most people to understand that this is a surprisingly common phenomena out there in the real world, because most folks sitting in a room like this wouldn't contemplate this kind of behavior, much less engage in it. But unfortunately, there's a lot of conduct that we wouldn't engage in or even contemplate that other people are much less reluctant to involve themselves in. The reason I'm here, I'm not really here to hold Judge Rhodes' hand, she always does just fine, is I had a conversation with Senator Courtney a bit of time ago, and I was suggesting to him that this is, in fact, a lot more common than most people realize, and even though this isn't against the law at the present time, from time to time, I think probably nearly every judge who's sat on the bench in Oregon for any number of years will have occasion to bump up against the problem of sexual assaults on animals not being against the law. My own experience with that goes back a number of years when I was on district court. I don't presently do any criminal work at all. But when I was on district court, there was an individual appearing in front of me who was convicted of criminal trespass. The reason he was convicted of criminal trespass was because he was going over to the neighbor's farm and abusing the neighbor's horses in the neighbor's barn. And that was the only crime that he was guilty of under the law. He was put on probation, and it was supervised probation because it was there were sexual aspects to it, although normally an individual who commits criminal trespass, it's a C misdemeanor, the lowest crime that we have, wouldn't be on supervised probation at all. During the course of his supervised probation, it became apparent that he had, in fact, engaged in assaults not only on the neighbor's horses but also on his own horse, and he entered into a formal agreement with his probation officer not to abuse his horse anymore. And it came before me on a probation violation, and the only offense that could be proceeded on was the fact that he had broken his commitment to his probation officer. When he appeared in front of me, he was actually quite proud of the fact that he'd been able to stop violating his neighbor's horses, and felt that that was a big step forward. It's just real different the way people who have these kinds of problems think, and so I think it's really difficult for those of us who don't to adequately get ourselves inside their minds and really appreciate. I'm not going to say this is a very common problem, but it's more common than most people would otherwise think. And I think you can probably hear more about that from some of the other witnesses who are here today, but I did want to share my experience as well.
Judge Lipkin, can you anticipate the argument we might get from some who are in the agriculture of the farming business? Might say, wait a minute, this makes me vulnerable. I mean, I'm not a molester. I don't have sex with my animals and so forth. But the fear of being vulnerable. My anticipation, we might get that kind of a concern. How would you respond to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think there is authority in the statute already that provides an exemption from animal neglect and animal abuse for actions of, I think the term is good husbandry. I'm not seeing it, just looking at a printout of the statute, maybe on a different page. But I know that it's there, and perhaps one of the other witnesses will be coming up. Here, thank you. Judge Jimmy Rhodes is much more familiar with this than I. Animal abuse in the first degree does include a provision that any practice of good animal husbandry is not a violation of this section. And perhaps a similar, and that is a consistent provision with animal abuse in the second degree as well. Perhaps that ought to be added to this particular statute. But on its face, the statute, I would suggest, it would probably be sufficient to avoid that problem simply because it's what we would call a specific intent crime. And it requires that the touching or the contact occur with the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire of a person. So I think as presently worded, the statute avoids that problem, but if we wanted to be careful to allay the fears of others in the business or of dealing with animals, there would be no problem with adding an additional provision such as appears in the animal abuse statutes now.
Thank you. Questions for either judge? Okay.
Thank you
very much. Constant Hawes, is that right? Hawes? From Washington County. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for holding this hearing. Everyone got their packet. My name is Constance Hawes. I reside in Washington County. I'm a retired graphic artist, and for many years I've been involved in what's commonly known as animal rescue and rehabilitation and fostering for neglected, abused, and quote-unquote throwaway animals. And I think I'll just mostly read my testimony into the record and then answer questions. First of all, I want to thank Senators Minnis and Courtney for their courage in sponsoring this bill, and thank the Judiciary Committee itself for holding this hearing. I have 10 years' experience working with a community of people who rescue unwanted, abused, neglected animals, rehabbing them, fostering them as necessary, and attempting to find secure, good homes for adoptable ones. The unadoptables are cared for in sanctuaries for the remainder of their lives. I have provided the committee with only one example that has been brought to my attention in the past few months as I got an education about the issue addressed in Senate Bill 227, sexual abuse of animals. When the idea was raised during discussions of what to include in the LC draft that later became Senate Bill 230 and Senate Bill 227, of including a provision to make sexual abuse of an animal a crime in Oregon, little did I know that this bill appears before this legislature not 1 minute too soon. How many parents realize that the word zoo is one of the words that they will need to add to the filter on their computers to protect their children from objectionable material? As the people who engage in this kind of behavior, as you heard from the first witness, there's thousands and thousands of sites. They call themselves zoo lovers, zoophiles. How awful to contemplate that groups who foster and adopt out animals now have to increase the vigilance to protect animals from organized fronts for those who would collect such animals for the express purpose of sexually abusing them. We've recently come into contact with information that there is, in fact, a concerted nationwide effort to train 15 to 17-year-old girls to go and collect animals as if they were adopting or fostering them for men, basically, who have this predilection. It is disturbing to learn of the concerted effort by these animal abusers to interfere with the active spay-neuter programs in as many communities as they can reach. Once again, we found out that they have an organized nationwide effort to counteract and, if possible, completely change the spay-neuter programs wherever they possibly can. As, to put it bluntly, these people prefer quote-unquote intact animals for their practices, and they want to get rid of full spay-neuter as much as they can. Most outrageous of all is the revelation detailed in this material I've provided to you today of the organized attempts and plans of the so-called zoophiles to aggressively seek to legitimize their deviant practices as a civil right within corporation, etc. I would urge the members of the committee to ask their staff to read this document cover to cover and notice the detailed plans for incorporating in various ways, and all states that don't have anti-bestiality laws now are quoted as being target states. That means Oregon. It is clear that these abusers have targeted all states which do not currently criminalize animal sex abuse. Oregon is therefore such a target. I urge this committee to make absolutely certain that Oregon does not become a terminus state for the activity of sexual abuse of animals. In that packet, you will find detailed examinations of the plans to get around the federal anti-obscenity laws for interstate commerce and for interstate communication, such as make it legal in one state, send the message to a state where it's not illegal, and the intervening states can't do anything about it. And states where the messages end up, the internet contacts end up, are called terminus states by these people. I ask that this committee vote to send Senate Bill 227 to the full Senate with a due pass recommendation. I hope all the committee members will work to help pass this bill in the Senate. Thank you so much for your efforts on this urgent issue, because, in fact, it is not a moment too soon. Any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Questions?
I'm not sure I understand at all. I shall try to read all of this. These are excerpts from... Right,
this is a download from an internet site where a very well-known zoophile is basically communicating to his community of interested parties their plans to incorporate in under various types of incorporation strategies, their plan to legitimize zoophilia under civil rights laws, and their plan to legitimize their offering of a service, which they say will be suicide prevention, as, in fact, they say that many zoophiles commit suicide. And that's their plan. As you read through here, for instance, I can, on page 2 of the document that I passed out, under our zoo civil rights campaign, the legalities, the last sentence, in fact, we can quickly get organized for our benefit in half this country, all the zoo legal states first, starting in Maine. They've already begun their campaign in Maine to organize and incorporate. And they're saying that they're incorporating as a group that offers the service of suicide prevention counseling for zoophiles. This packet is extremely graphic. They talk directly about training people to have sex with animals, videotapes that they plan to sell, and so forth. It goes through for, they describe voluntary associations, standard corporations on page 4. About the middle of the page, I'm not sure you'll be able to find it easily, but on page 4, I'll read what it says. Then in each zoo legal state in turn, our lawyers will have to complete anti-obscenity research in preparation to registering our corporation in said state. The very same day that first state is removed from the disclaimer list, we must have what is called a legal test case ready to go. This test case would have to be prepared by a first-class lawyer ahead of time and would likely be somewhat modified, quote, how to have sex with a canine or equine guide. And it goes on. They have the strategies for, and they go through the pros and cons of which kind of corporation would be best to choose. And on page 5, another quote in the top half, the top paragraph there, towards the bottom. Once our nonprofit corporation is set up in Maine, it costs only $100 to register it in each state. And so, like I said, this will take some study by staff, by your staff, to become aware of the detailed plans these people have. But as I said, I'm very hopeful that Oregon will pass a law against this behavior before it becomes endemic and institutionalized. Does that help, Senator Duncan?
I guess so. yes, Senator Burdick.
Thank you. You mentioned that they were trying to interfere with spay and neuter clinics. How does that work exactly?
They want to, instead of spay neuter, they want to advocate tubal ligation and vasectomy for dogs and cats and other animals, that people's companion animals that would normally have complete removal of organs as part of the control of population program. Because that leaves the animal, and again I quote from another one of the documents I didn't give you, they prefer more intact animals. Mm-hmm. And so they have outreach programs to advocate for, amongst the veterinary community, to try to advocate for this under the guise of it's less invasive surgery, et cetera.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Have you seen, because I've volunteered with the Feral Cat Coalition before.
I'm aware of that group.
And I've never seen, and I have several pets that I've had spayed and neutered, and I've never seen anything like this, never had anyone suggest or seen any information suggest.
I can give you a copy of this. I can get a copy made of the information and give it to your staff member. At another time, I can mail it to you. I didn't make any copies of that today because I was giving you a pretty thick packet today. But it goes into, this is a fairly widespread, widely known plan and behavior. People were involved in the rehab groups like me. We keep in touch on the internet. And when something happens in another state, we find out about it so that we can watch out for it here. I'm not aware of any local groups performing this advocation right now in Oregon. But it's their plan to advocate it throughout the United States.
Well, thank you, Ms. House.
Thank you very much.
As I say, one of the things in this business, learn something new every day.
You think you've heard it all, and then something like this comes up. I know.
So.
Thank you very much.
Lieutenant Covey. Clackamas. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
My name is Lieutenant Randy Covey. I'm employed by the Oregon Humane Society. As a law enforcement officer commissioned specifically to enforce the animal welfare laws of the state of Oregon, I recognize Senate Bill 227 as a necessary step in the direction of identifying and addressing human behavior that has a great potential to cause harm to animals and may lead to causing harm to humans. I don't want to beat around the bush. Animal sexual abuse, often referred to as bestiality, as Ms. Hawes testified, people that participate in this sort of behavior refer to themselves as zoos or zoophiles. That type of activity is a sexual molestation of an animal by a human. This kind of abuse includes a wide range of behaviors such as vaginal, anal, or oral penetration, fondling, oral genital contact, penetration using an object, and killing or injuring an animal for sexual gratification. Animal sexual abuse may or may not include physical violence other than the sexual violation, and may or may not result in physical injury to the animal. However, animal sexual abuse, like rape, is the eroticization of violence, control, and exploitation. Frequently asked questions taken from a bestiality website, or a what they call a zoo website, include: how do you know when an animal consents to a sexual relationship with a human? Senator Courtney testified that part of the problem with this is that there is not consent provided ostensibly by an animal. However, these people themselves indicate that consent is given if the dog or other animal simply does not resist or does not protest with a whine or a yip, a bark or a growl, pushing away or moving away, or by attacking you. In essence, the statement that they make is that when they pet a dog on the head, if it doesn't resist by one of the in one of the ways that I've mentioned,
and is clearly pleased, it can well be said to be consenting. In other words, if you treat an animal in a way that you normally should treat an animal and it responds positively, these people take that as consent to perpetrate these acts of bestiality. One of the other questions, frequently asked questions to these types of websites, do you know where I can find animals to have sex with? And the last question that asked, and I don't want to go into too much detail about that, but one of the questions asked the person that maintains this website is, why do you use an anonymous remailer? Indicating that if you send an email to this person to ask questions, it goes through an anonymous process over the internet to where you cannot locate this person. And their response is pretty telltale. The answer is, if you had sex with dogs and horses, wouldn't you hide too? The sexual abuse of animals is often linked to the sexual abuse of women and children. In interviews with battered women, and I reiterate, battered women, bestiality was mentioned as one of the unusual sex acts desired by their partners. In interviews with battered women, or in a test group made up of women who had past relationships with battering and non-battering partners, it was found that this experience occurred with 41% of the battering partners and only 5% of the non-battering partners. I would submit to you that that indicates that bestiality is, in fact, an indication of a proclivity to participate in battering and other forms of human abuse. Research also indicates a connection between animal sexual abuse and other types of violent crimes. According to a 1986 study, 40% of the perpetrators of sexually motivated homicides reported that they had sexually abused animals as a precursor to moving up to humans. I'll keep this short. As a law enforcement officer, specifically commissioned by the state of Oregon to enforce the animal welfare crimes, I often see evidence in the investigation of animal crimes of human crimes as well. We work closely with other police departments, sheriff's departments, to help identify those crimes. Making this bill a law would help us in that regard. Having said that, I urge you to support Senate Bill 227 and work diligently to ensure that it becomes law.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Covey. Are there any questions for him? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to do something. I'm going to reverse the order just a little bit, folks. I think that there's some indication I'm getting from the committee. I want to move. Ingrid, would you mind coming up and testifying for Mrs. Patterson and Mr. Bagelow? I'm not neglecting you, but let me move to Ingrid for a minute. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Our organization has not taken a position on this bill. However, they did request that I testify about the penalty attached.
Would you please tell the organization? So
I'm sorry. Yes, it's Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers.
Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers, okay.
And it's Ingrid Swenson on behalf of the organization. If the legislature decides to make behavior criminal, that is certainly within the legislature's range of authority. However, to take an offense which didn't exist and make it a felony the first time around didn't strike us as necessary to accomplish what it is that it appears the bill wishes to accomplish. If the purpose is a strong statement of sort of moral outrage, then maybe a felony is the category that might be appropriate. If, however, it is to address the behavior that is harmful to the animal, it is our suggestion that a Class A misdemeanor might be appropriate. If you intentionally injure an animal under current law, it's a Class B misdemeanor. If you intentionally cause serious physical injury to that animal, it's a Class A misdemeanor. So if you're focusing on the degree of harm to the animal by the behavior that's involved here, something other than a felony might be appropriate. I haven't seen the Dash 1 amendments. However, one suggestion that you might consider would be, rather than making a psychological evaluation mandatory in every case,
you might give the court discretion to require an evaluation in those cases where it seems appropriate. I guess I'm foreseeing juvenile court matters involving children in contact with animals, some of which is inappropriate, some of which is a poor approach at learning about sexual behavior, and rather than seeing all of that conduct treated as felony conduct with mandatory psychological evaluations and so forth, it seems to me that there might be some room for treating some of this conduct as misdemeanor conduct, particularly when we're talking about touching an animal, for example, on the mouth, and children might well do that, and young adolescents might do it with some kind of sexual intent in mind. But that's not the kind of harm that I'm hearing about here. I'm hearing about harm from intercourse with animals and physical violation of animals and so forth. So it seems like there's a range of conduct that perhaps could be dealt with in a different way.
Questions, Greenberg?
I do.
Yes.
Are you familiar with any of the research relevant to animal abuse, sexual abuse, and any connection between psychosexual killers and other types of...
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I certainly have seen research which talks... When we have an offender who's convicted of those offenses against people, we often find that among the things that they have done in the past is animal abuse, either physical or sexual. But I don't know that there's a causal connection. It may be a large group of sexual offenders, especially violent sexual offenders, do abuse animals. I don't think there's a direct correlation numerically between them, but I think there's certainly some connection. On the other hand, I think there are children, particularly young people, who may misbehave with animals and never extend that behavior beyond the conduct with that animal.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Glenn Stonebrick, would you come forward? You. Good afternoon, Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Stonebrick. I represent the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I know it is risky to put my name on the sign-up sheet in opposition to this bill, especially when there are those who are writing down who is for and who is against. It may be construed that the Oregon Cattlemen Association in some way would approve of people having sexual assaults on animals, and that is not why we oppose this bill. The reason we put down that we oppose this bill, and hopefully we can straighten this out before I conclude, but the livestock industry, and specifically the cattle industry, as many of you know, has been under attack from all corners, mostly from the environmental extremist sector. However, this bill could cause our producers to add just one more thing that they'd have to look over their shoulder at. The activities described in this bill would place our producers at risk, the things that are described at first. Now, other than the clause for good animal husbandry or an exemption, and we always have a fear that how will that be construed by someone, or if in the future that clause could be changed in any way, that would give us some concern. However, and guess what I'm saying is that it always puts us in position of defending ourselves for those activities that we consider to be good animal husbandry, but someone else may not. I guess in conclusion, and one other thing, the penalty for this, if we were unsuccessful and any one of our producers were unsuccessful in defending themselves for those activities that we feel are very normal and in good animal husbandry, the penalty is very severe. Now, having said all of that, and I have visited with the makers of the bill, proponents of the bill, and just for the record, that we would be satisfied if it was clearly understood that this was not the intent to interfere with those activities, as I guess we can best describe them by law as good animal.
So if that amendment were added, you you could live with the bill, is what you're
saying. Mr. Chairman, I realize that it's the section that it's amending in ORS already has that clause in it. I just wanted to mostly state our concern with the bill, and to make it clear that, you know, when people do say things and when you do vote for things, they mean things later on in the court of law.
I think the Supreme Court has told us that.
Clearly understood, right. Then we do not oppose it.
Well, I was anticipating as you can imagine, I asked that question earlier of the judge because I was anticipating the response you might have on that. Any questions for Glenn?
I do, Mr. Sullivan.
Yes.
You're much more familiar with animal husbandry than I am, but can you cite me an example of where someone might be engaged in that kind of business and would do so for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire of a person?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Menace, there's two parts to this, and yes, I will cite your example. As you look at the bill, it talks about anyone who touches the mouth or makes a person to touch or contact the mouth, the anus, sex organs, etc. Those things do happen.
For the purpose of arousing and gratifying?
And that's the second part. Yeah, excuse me. That's the second part to where I say that we'd have to defend ourselves. We understand them. They're very clear. We do things in the fall of the year when we bring the cattle in and do pregnancy testing that will oftentimes, while the animal is in a confined area, we will look in their mouth. We have to open their mouth to see if they, you know, if they're losing teeth. Sure. Is a good time to cull the animal if they are. That would fit in this as far as step one, that we would be touching the mouth. Pregnancy testing itself, artificial insemination, those things. So the burden of proof then would be if, and I know this is perhaps stretching, but if someone said who didn't like a producer said, you know, there's a law against what you're doing to that animal and I'm going to get you arrested, the burden of proof would then have to be on the producer to prove that he wasn't doing it for that purpose and whatsoever.
But you'd have to be arrested for it first and indicted and held to stand trial. My assumption, you'd have to have a DA that would agree that whatever it was you were doing was for the purpose of gratifying sexual desire. I can't possibly imagine, you know, unless some farmer's out there doing it with their, you know, their pants are off and they're somehow aroused. I don't know.
Senator Courtney.
You say burden of proof would be on the individual. The prosecution, the burden's got to be carried by the prosecution.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, I understand that. I guess the fear that we have, and we've...
I understand. No, okay. I clearly understand. I do want to make sure we understand that you're going to be arrested, as the chair said, and be prosecuted for this. They've got to carry the burden. And, yeah, it's a question of fact. I mean, yes. It's not the intent of the bill to do that. You and I have discussed that, as well as the fact that a presiding judge came before us today and actually put on, you know, spoke to actually this very issue, if I'm not mistaken, Judge Paul Lipscomb. And I don't know, obviously that's going to clarify it, but the only thing else we can do is make the reference, which is already in law, and I don't think we can get there any other way than that. As I say, it's not my intent or the makers of the bill's intent to do that, to stop your industry or to get people arrested for good husbandry.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond, I think what the two of you senators have said is sufficient and satisfies us for because it is on the record of the intent. And I thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dan. Okay. I have further people have signed up. I'll let you come up. If you have something new to add, I think this committee is kind of ready to move, and we have a long agenda. So if you want to get it on the record that you support the bill, feel free. Mrs. Patterson, Mr. Beglau, Ms. Stark, Ms. Peterson. You just want to, if you have something in writing you want to present that, you can. I give it to them, we'll get that. But I think there's a point sometimes in this process when you got it made, you better move forward rapidly.
Well, I'll just...
Okay.
Chair Minnis and members of the committee.
Yes.
I have nothing new to add. I think everything's been...
And you're Kelly?
I'm Kelly Peterson.
Okay.
I represent the Humane Society of the United States. So I sent my testimony around.
Okay, Kelly Peterson, we have your testimony and you're on record as being supportive of the bill. All right. Mrs. Patterson? Yes, Ms. Patterson. Uh-huh.
Yes, I would just like to say that I'm here today representing Dr. John Cochran, who was called out of town to attend a trial in Klamath Falls. My name is Wanda Patterson, and I'm a counselor. I've worked with sex offenders, their families, their spouses, and even some of their children for 15 years plus now. I worked both inpatient and outpatient at the Oregon State Hospital and at Prigg Cottage when it was the release center. I worked in the corrections treatment program at the state hospital. I am here in support of Senate Bill 227, penalties for the sexual abuse of animals. Research has shown a strong correlation between abuse, including sexual abuse of animals, and later violent or sexually violent abuse of humans. In inpatient ward OSH, over 50% of the patients that I have dealt with have admitted to sexual abuse of animals, and that doesn't include the ones that wouldn't admit it because to them they think that it's shameful, as it is. To illustrate this point, I'm going to give you a short...
Is it possible, is that, do you have that prepared in...
No, I don't. Like I said, I was called here.
I think the committee is ready to move, so if we just have you on the record as being supportive, I think that's going to be sufficient for right now.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Yes. Ms. Stark.
Yes. Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Eileen Stark. I'm the Anti-Cruelty Education Director for the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and I'd just like to express our deep gratitude to Senator Minnis and Senator Courtney for co-sponsoring this important bill and for giving the Animal Legal Defense Fund the opportunity to draft the bill. So I'm just here to say that we do support.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now, I feel like I've yes, Mr. Begloff.
Mr. Chair, yes. Members of the committee, my name's Walt Begloff. I'm a deputy district attorney here in Marion County, and I manage all the prosecutions of adult sex offenders in Marion County. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and we support this bill. It's concise, it's well-written, and I'd like to address some of the concerns that was brought up just a few minutes ago, one of which is the burden of proof on this particular criminal statute. Every single element of this charge would require the state, through the district attorney, to prove beyond a reasonable doubt whether the act was for the performance of a sexual gratification of that individual. And I guess I'd bring up other sex crimes that I prosecute. You know, thousands of parents touch the vaginal areas of their young infants every day, but that's for good hygiene or for taking care of their children. Once again, the sound discretion of reviewing that charge and proving a sexual intent behind that act is what is critical, and I think this statute is fine with that. It might be good to add into this section to clearly put in there that any practice of good animal husbandry is not a violation of this particular statute. As far as the concerns about whether this should be a C felony, the District Attorney's Association thinks it should be a Class C felony. I think it would be commensurate with other sexual crimes and where they are, and would allow potentially, if you had a very serious sexual offender who violated the statute, could eventually be eligible for a prison sentence if they had criminal convictions that would enhance their criminal history score at the time you wanted to review that conviction, whether they were convicted at trial or bench trial or pled guilty. A misdemeanor would not allow that. The maximum penalty would be only 1 year, and that could only be under the local supervisory authority of your county or the jail in your particular county. So those are the additional comments I wanted to make from other things that were made. I think this is a good bill.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Okay, as I said, I think I really hurried the last four of you and would like to have heard your testimony, but I think we're ready to kind of move forward looking at the agenda we have today. So I'm going to close the public hearing. I want to go to a work session. And I'm going to open a work session on a Senate Bill 227.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 227.
Senator Metzger moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 227. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Menace.
Do we have anybody, we had some discussion about shall versus may in terms of psychiatric evaluation.
Oh, yes, Ingrid brought that up.
We could just chat about that for just a second.
Okay, do you want just a moment to discuss the shall and may and the...
Do we have anybody from the court system here that...
Anybody from the court system?
Do you have Keenan or not?
She didn't have a topic.
Senate Bill 227, looking at the shell, it's the...
Line 5.
The amendment, line 5. The court shall order that the youth undergo psychiatric or psychological evaluation. I think that was the concern you brought up.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
it also appears again in line 18, but that involves an adult. I assume that Ingrid was only speaking to the youth situation.
Chair and Senator Courtney, I was suggesting, and I'm sorry I hadn't seen these amendments, but I was suggesting that it ought not to be mandatory in every case, that the court might decide that the particular behavior did not warrant an evaluation.
I understand that. But you were speaking about youth or in general?
In general.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Burdick.
A question. Where did the amendment come from? You said it wasn't from you. Where did it come from?
I forget another state. This is state law. I forget the other state, though it's a state law. They had put this in their law, and when I heard about it, I thought it was that that's where it came from. I thought it made sense because the potential, what you're seeing here could be very great, and to get a handle on it right now, you know, you might also, it helps the kid. It may tell you the kid himself has been abused, so you can start to treat the kid, but also gives you an indication of an adult what may be going on in that adult's mind where you might get something really dangerous going to happen. So that, I thought, was a good idea.
I think the judiciary might have a response to that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Good afternoon. Nancy Miller from the State Court Administrator's Office. I would just support the notion of using the word may, and the reason I would support that notion, you may have a situation, and this happens in juvenile court a lot, you may have a situation where you've already had that youth within the jurisdiction of the court. There may be an evaluation on that youth already available. And when you use the word shall, you kind of tie the hands. You would have to go pay for another evaluation. I think the court would carefully consider whether or not an evaluation was warranted either in an adult or juvenile case, and the discretion, I would argue, is probably a better bet.
The judge. Yes, Senator.
You don't even need the amendment then. If you're going to go to May, you don't even need the amendment, do you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, with the amendment, you're really kind of calling to attention that the legislature is saying, boy, you better really take a look at this because we think it's...
So you want us to roll back to May, but you don't want us to roll back all the way to May.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, not all the way to shell. But we're not going to oppose it either, so no. It's up to you to decide.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Another issue, if we do shall, I wonder if that puts us in the area of unfunded mandates on maybe our ways and means expert.
Are you asking whether this would violate it?
Well, whether it would be a factor, yeah.
Well, it's unlikely, Nancy, you can help with that a little bit. It seems to me that would be, it wouldn't violate the national constitution requires an amendment, but you don't know that unless you have a small budget with a huge impact. Theoretically, it might be possible, but highly unlikely that it would reach that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, one of the questions that came to my mind when we first started talking about the amendment was who would pay for the evaluation. And Ann Christian is here. I don't know where we are on developing the fiscal and determining the number of cases that might be affected.
Yes, please come forward. Let's folks help you understand. One of the reasons we wanted to move to a work session while you folks were all here today so we could hear this full discussion, so that's why part of the reason I was hustling some of you people moving forward here. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and Christian with the State Court Administrator's Office, we developed a fiscal impact statement on the original bill, And I don't know what legislative fiscal has provided you, but at least for the judicial department, and again, it's on the original bill, an indeterminate amount for court operations. For indigent defense, our estimate was $1,290 for the next partial biennium and $1,720 for the full next biennium. That, of course, would not take into the question that Ms. Miller raised as far as who pays for the psychological evaluation. But we assumed, and this, of course, was without the benefit of testimony, that, and these fiscals are very difficult to do, but based on information that was available, we anticipated less than 25 Class C felony prosecutions for the biennium.
You know, yes, Senator Harper.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm comfortable with the May aspect of life. I think I'm comfortable with leaving it in, because when we're all gone, that says in there that we believe that the counseling is an important part. Mm-hmm. But we need to leave a little discretion just because of what we've heard.
So it gives the judge discretion, but yet it points out that we think
this is an important part.
Mm-hmm. Senator Courtney?
Is he told it? Okay, do you want to...
Oh, yes, excuse me.
Yeah, did you want to say something on this?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I just want to answer the question about what the current status is. The courts certainly in every county have the authority at the request of party to request an evaluation to determine whether or not there is information about that individual they want to know for purposes of sentencing. It certainly is good practice to have an evaluation, particularly when you're considering putting a person on probation in the community. Those are the comments I wanted to make.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I want to move to the line. Let me find myself here. You're going to help
line
me.
Line five.
Conceptual amendment?
Is it? It
was an actual amendment.
I'm proposing an actual amendment.
You know, it took Judy Hall 3 seconds to get my committee the other night when I mentioned the word. I wouldn't even do it.
Propose an actual amendment on line five, the word shall be deleted, the word may be inserted. And in the line 18, the word shall be deleted and the word may be inserted. And I believe that's the extent of my actual amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you might want to consider line 14, which relates to formal accountability agreements. Line 14 currently reads, the agreement must require... That could be changed to may to be.
In the line 14, the word must be deleted, in the line, and the word may inserted. Is that going to do it, Learned High Counsel?
Senator Menas.
I just want to restate what we're doing here. Senator Metzger removed the dash one amendment.
Yes.
I believe that, according to our procedures and rules, Senator Horton is moving to amend the motion. Okay.
With these revised.
Could we review the lines where shall is turned to may?
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
if you'd like, I can do that for the committee. Line 5, the word shall would be changed to may. Line 14, the word must would be changed to may. And line 18, the word shall would be changed to may.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Okay, now on line 5, on line 7, if warranted by the mental condition of the youth, the court shall order that the youth undergo appropriate care treatment. I just want to make sure that we want to keep that shall in. So the evaluation is discretionary, but if it shows up something, then we want to keep that mandatory?
Well, if I can speak to that.
Senator Mendes.
The statement or the line says, if warranted.
If warranted.
So it isn't required. It's already contingent. Even though it says shall, it says if warranted by the mental condition, then they shall. So in that sense, it's permissive.
I'm comfortable with that way. I just wanted
those are you have, okay, Senator Courtney has moved to amend to amend his motion for adoption of the dash one amendments. Okay. And I think we should make it clear for the record that this is not the intent of this group is not a watering down. We still the emphasis is still on the importance of the psychological, psychiatric kinds of examinations, but we're not mandating a judge to do it. We're just highlighting it, okay? Is there any discussion on that motion? Any objection? Okay. The dash one amendments have been adopted. Now we're going to adopt the dash one amendment. Is there any discussion? As amended. Hearing none, dash one amendment is adopted. As amended is adopted. Senator Courtney.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 227 as amended to the floor with the Senate's recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves the Senate Bill 227 as amended be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question about the fiscal impact. We don't have a statement yet.
And you got? Do you have one on this?
I have the fiscal that the Judicial Department submitted. And based upon my experience, although clearly I'm not speaking for legislative fiscal, one would anticipate the fiscal impact statement from legislative fiscal office, including Judicial Department, and what we have submitted is clearly less than $50,000, and any costs related to felony supervision, since this is a Class C felony, or possible prison beds. And I'm not well-equipped to address that issue.
Yes, Senator.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess we don't have that here. And I think the amendment is probably going to raise that from the psychological evaluation. The chair disagrees.
I don't know if that would not warrant a referral to ways.
I don't think it will. Basically, what we've done is we've just put in statute. We've restated an authority that the court already has.
So we're really doing is sending significant importance, and that the judges, the judiciary shall.
We want them to take attention to this, and if it's more to order the thing.
I think we have someone who might want to respond to that. Yes.
Well, I
would you please identify yourself?
I'm Cindy Engel. I'm sorry. I live in Linn County now. I was just curious. I believe when you are convicted of a crime, once you're convicted, you end up paying all the incurred costs in counseling and all that stuff. I believe I have a relative, you're shaking your head no, that is responsible for all things on a sexual offense. So I would like to see that be addressed. I mean, you're concerned about who's going to pay for it. If they're convicted, some of these guys come out of there with a $20,000 to $40,000, debt to the state. Something I don't know if you're aware of, but I know it does happen on sexual offenses. Just wanted to bring that up to see if you might want to look into that a little bit. Does that make sense?
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Appreciate that. Yes, Senator Harper.
Are we in discussion?
We're in discussion.
Okay. I just want to, once again, for the record, the concern raised by the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, the language is crystal clear. If they are running the ranch, they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It does have nothing
to do with the animal husbandry.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. We're not confused.
Is there other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
I guess on the fiscal side of it, I will be comfortable doing this today if, when it gets to the floor, there is a fiscal that is bigger than $50,000, the chair of the committee will make a motion to send this bill to Ways and Means at that point in time.
I would actually object to that. I would rather send it to the House and let the co-chairs decide whether or not they want to see the thing.
I'll let you two work that out when it comes to the floor. It looks to me like it's about to go. Is there any other discussion? Okay. It's been moved that Senate Bill 227 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Courtney and Senator Minton be a co-chair. 2:30. Thank you, folks, for being here today to testify. And appreciate your comments, and I'm sorry, we would like to have heard more, but I was trying to move it on. Okay, thank you. Okay, you bet. Bye. Okay. You want
to?
Yes.
That was not a juvenile. It was a 25-year-old man who had previously molested his 3-year-old.
sad story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing. Oh, excuse me. No. Mr. Chair, we have work sessions here.
Right.
Work session. You want?
I think we're Senate Bill 75.
Yeah. You want to
run that?
Yeah, I need to.
Okay. Work session on Senate Bill 75.
All right. Yes. Chairman and members of the committee, Senate Bill 75 is before you for work session with an amendment 75-1. Nancy Miller is here. This is a bill that we heard testimony from the Judicial Department earlier this month. It's regarding citizen review boards. And if you'll recall our discussion, we talked about citizen review boards and the fact that the statute on the books currently is a statute that will sunset, and I think the Judicial Department testified that they'd like to streamline the statutes, and so they've given us amendments, and I can explain them to you. 75-1, if you look at the, do you have it, that one?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What 75-1 does is, first, it includes juvenile corrections personnel as those people who can serve on a local citizen review board. That was included so that their expertise would be included. Also, the language would include in law enforcement and corrections people. The other substantive amendment is that no person from the Oregon Youth Authority shall serve on a citizen review board reviewing delinquency cases. I think that was done because so that there would be no perceived conflict in those situations. And Nancy is here. If you have any questions, I don't know if you recall this bill, but these are the amendments that we talked about at the time we heard the public hearing.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, Andrew.
I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 75.
Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 75. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Courtney.
Learned by counsel, so we're together. The bill is now to take care of in terms of the sensitivity issues and things.
Yes, I think that these are the issues that were raised at the public hearing, and I think that the amendments do address. I think really what came up was, if you'll recall, we talked about the fact that in some of the more rural counties, there aren't that many people who have expertise that are able to serve on these. Oh, and I should say the other amendment that was related to that is on line 12 of -1. It says that a person that's domiciled or employed in that county can serve on a board. That was the other issue that Ms. Miller brought up, was that there are people that live in a county and work in a county that would like to serve on these citizen reviewer boards, and I think the Judicial Department wanted to include either of those people. Mm-hmm.
We talked about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for inviting High Council for that explanation.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the -1 amendments? All right. Is there any opposition to the -1 amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Courtney.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 75 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 75 as amended to be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Call a work session on Senate Bill 76 relating to the qualifications of interpreters.
We did that. You were not here.
We did that one when it was gone. Okay. Senate Bill, open a work session. Excuse me. Yeah, open a work session on Senate Bill 168. You know, I'm not sure I closed the work session on Senate Bill 75, did I? Now I'm opening the work session on Senate Bill 168.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did you identify a carrier from the last bill?
Oh.
I'm not volunteering, by the way. I was just asking.
75. Anybody want to carry that particular bill?
128.
Senator Courtney will carry it.
I'll carry anything anybody wants to carry.
All right.
I'm not trying. Somebody else wants to carry it.
No. You provide more drama on the floor. Once.
Yeah.
Opening the work session, then on Senate Bill 168.
You want to carry it?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, moving to the work session on Senate Bill 168, there are no amendments to this bill. I do want to just refresh your memory on what bill this is. Mm-hmm. This is the bill that we heard testimony on February 2nd. This is regarding forced release of inmates. This is the bill that, you may recall, allowed a sheriff who has to release inmates in an emergency situation to enter a release agreement with that inmate, and if the inmate does not appear for a court per the agreement, that the they can proceed on a failure to appear on that criminal failure to appear charge on the release agreement.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on Senate Bill 168? Yes, Senator Mendez.
I just want to make a note here that Ann Christian noted to me earlier that this particular measure may have a fiscal impact, but it's uncertain at this time. So my expectation is that by the time it gets over to the House, there may be a fiscal that is larger than what she earlier anticipated, and that's because of some of the discussion. My intent was to send it over there, give you guys some time to deal with the issue. And this, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee of the House and I are talking constantly back and forth about what's coming across with or without fiscal stuff. And both of us have an understanding, kind of to Senator Byers' question about those issues that end up with a fiscal over $50,000. The agreement we have and the direction we have from the presiding officers is that the Ways and Means Committee has to see those. So I'm trying to redeem the time here, in essence, move it across and give you some opportunity, I guess, to come up with a legitimate fiscal that you feel comfortable with. So it's kind of a...
Yes, Senator Brick.
Chairman, just to clarify on that, the fiscal would come because there's a new crime of failure to appear, or more crimes of failure to appear. So I would think of fiscal... Okay.
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, that's correct. I think that was the concern raised by Ms. Christian.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Yes.
Is there a motion on this?
Oh, excuse me. I don't think there is.
Senator Courtney. I move Senate Bill 168 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 168 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 168 was set to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Closing the work session on 168, open the work session on Senate Bill 318. We need a carrier on that bill?
I volunteered.
Senator Burdick will carry the bill. Okay. Senate Bill 318. Mr. Prinz.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, moving to Senate Bill 318. This is a bill that we heard testimony on, also February 2nd, I believe. This is the bill that, from the Oregon Lottery, we talked to during the public hearing. Recall that currently there's a crime of possession of gambling records, and that crime predates the Oregon Lottery and then the other state lotteries. And so at the time of the hearing, the bill would have had a defense to possessing gaming records if you have those from another state's lottery for the purpose of playing the game at capacity as a player. You might recall that we had discussion about why not just exempting that from the statute 167.132, which makes that criminal. And that's what the Dash 1 amendment does. It, rather than having a defense, it adds subsection 3, which makes an exemption. Quote, "This section does not apply if the writing, paper, instrument, or article originates from a lottery that is lawfully operated under the laws of a state, and the person possesses the writing, paper, instrument, or article solely in the person's capacity as a player."
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
the Dash 1 amendments.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments.
Senator Courtney moves the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion?
318.
Is there objection? Hearing none? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Courtney.
Senate Bill 318 is amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 318 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 318 will be sent to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 318. Opening, and the carrier will be Senator Menace will carry the bill. Opening the work session on Senate Bill 366. Mr. Prinz.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, 366. Don Balk and Diane Middle are here. This is a bill that we heard testimony on January 26th of this year. It's a bill regarding the public safety memorial for public safety officers who have a permanent disability in relation to their their service as public safety officers or are killed in the line of duty. We had discussion on this, and an amendment has been, a proposed amendment has been drafted by legislative council, should be before you as -1. I think, if you'll recall, discussion centered around does the memorial fund pay out to the dependents if there's alternative coverage? And the amendments would, with that in mind, would say, would insert if alternative coverage is not provided in line 4 and in line 9. And the last substantive amendment would be that there was some discussion that the intent of the statute was to have the payment of benefits go to a family member, and that's what the bill would do, would make sure it's a family member. But the -1 amendment, line 5, would state one or more family members so that it could be more than one family member. And as I said, Diane Middle and Don Balker here from the DPSST.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 366.
Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendment to 367 Bill 366. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Is there any objection to Senate Bill 366 amendments, the -1 amendments? Hearing none. The -1 amendments are adopted.
366 has amended to the bill of the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 366 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection to the bill as amended? Hearing none, Senate Bill 366 as amended will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier. Senator Harper, I'd be delighted. Senator Harper will be the carrier.
What's this thing do?
Okay, do we have some
introductions?
Yes. We have no introductions. Is there anything else to cover for the committee? Thank you very much. You've done very well. Ladies and gentlemen.